but I want to give you a little test, and nobody's going to know how you did on this test except yourself. But and it's just one question. But I thought with all the students back, it'd be a good time to get in the swing of things. Here's the question I want to ask, and I got this question from the Bible Book of List. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. What female is mentioned by name more in the Bible than any other person, any other female? Now, you can think about it for a second. You think of all the females in the Bible. And think about which female is, because I'm going to talk about this person today, or going to give a sermon about this person. So you've had a chance to think about it, and I'm going to go, here's the top 14. I'm going to begin at 14 and go down to number 1. So you got in your mind who you think it might be. And again, I don't want to embarrass anybody by asking you to raise your hand to make a comment. But here they are. Number 14, so way down the list, is Abigail. Abigail, that's not right. I'm reading my wrong notes. She's not number 14. Number 14 is, and this one surprises me, Eve. I thought Eve was mentioned quite a bit. Eve is mentioned 4 times by name, only 4 times by name in the Bible. Number 13, mentioned 12 times is Bathsheba. Bathsheba, one of David's wives. Number 12, mentioned 13 times. So if you know, you may be dropping, yours may be falling, some of yours may fall right here. Number 12, mentioned 13 times is Ruth. Ruth, a book about Ruth, and her name is mentioned 13 times. Number 11, there's a tie between two that are mentioned 14 times. One is Hagar, and the other is Mary Magdalene. So is your person still around? Okay, number 9, another tie. There's two ladies mentioned 15 times, and one of those is Abigail, which I said earlier, but she's in a tie with Miriam. So now we got down to number 7. 19 times mentioned by name in the Bible, Mary, the mother of Jesus. So now we're down to number 6. 23 times mentioned in the Bible, Jezebel. Jezebel. And it's never mentioned in a real positive light, but she's number 6. Number 5, mentioned 31 times in the Bible by name, and that's Rebecca. Number 4, mentioned 44 times, Leah. So now we're down to number 3. So when they have the Miss America contest, you know, they get down to the top 3. Well, we got the top 3. So second runner-up, I guess you could say, at number 3 is Rachel. So now we just got 2. First runner-up, number 2, mentioned 56 times, Esther. So that just leaves 1. You know who it is, don't you? It's not Natalie. It's not Amanda either, for what it's worth. Mentioned 59 times, Sarah. I want to talk about Sarah today because she's a remarkable woman in so many ways, and she's mentioned by name in the Bible more than any other woman. 59 specific times it mentions the name Sarah, or S-A-R-A-I, Sarai. Before God changed her name to Sarah, remember he changed Abram's name to Abraham and Sarai's name to Sarah. She's a remarkable woman, but she's somewhat of a paradox. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Because Sarah is mentioned in the faith chapter. Now, she's one of 2 females that's mentioned in the faith chapter, and the other female that's mentioned in there is not even in this list. I'll let you figure that out. I think you probably know who it is. But in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 11, notice what it says here. It says, by faith, she's listening to the faith chapter, by faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. And she bore a child when she was past age. And you know the story. We're going to look at that in a few minutes. Because she judged him, meaning God, faithful, who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, Abraham was 100 years old, and Sarah was 90 at the birth, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is on the seashore. So there it mentions Sarah. Now, let's look at Isaiah 51, where it mentions her name, one of the many times she's mentioned. But Isaiah 51 is another couple of verses. Verse 1 and 2 of Isaiah 51 says, "Listen to me." So here is Isaiah speaking the word of God. It says, "Listen to me, you who follow after righteousness." So Isaiah is calling out those who strive to be righteous. "You who seek the Lord, look to the rock from which you were hewn, and to the hole of the pit from which you were dug. Look to Abraham your father, and to Sarah who bore you, for I called him alone, and I blessed him and increased him." Now, we see Sarah as an example of faith. We saw that in Hebrews 11:11, and we saw in Isaiah 51:1-2 that Sarah was called as a righteous person. Yet, she lied more than once in the Bible, and she second-guesses God in a way. At times, she seemed rather vindictive, as we'll see. At times, she seems no more converted than, the proverbial alley cat. At times, but things changed. What motivated this woman, at times a vengeful woman, to become converted, to make a 180-degree turn? Let's look at her life, because she sets an example to be followed by you and I, whether we're male or female. Sarah sets a wonderful example. Now, let's look at her life. Let's look at Genesis chapter 11 to get the genealogy of Sarah. And again, Sarah, S-A-R-A-I, and God changed her name to S-A-R-A-H, because names mean something to God, and we'll take a look at that here in a few minutes. But in Genesis chapter 11, verse 27, 28, and 29, says this is the genealogy of Terah, T-E-R-A-H. Terah begat Abram, or Abram, who God changed his name to Abraham, remember? Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begat Lot. Remember Lot. And Haran died before his father, Terah, in his native land in the Ur of the Chaldeans. Then Abram and Nahor took wives. Now the name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Isaac. But, notice verse 30, but Sarah, or Sarai, was barren. She had no child. Now, being barren, not being able to have children, was something just totally, it's what is a, today, it's we look sad when a lady or our husband are not able to have children. But back in Bible times, it was considered very, very, very bad. In fact, let's look at Luke. You might as well keep your place in Genesis. We're coming right back there. But Luke 1, give you an example here of how women were actually looked down upon in some sense when they weren't able to produce children. But in Luke 1, verse, let's see here, 24. Now here is the example of Zacharias and his wife Elizabeth, who the child John the Baptist came from. It said in verse 24, Luke 1, it says, "Now after those days, his wife, Zacharias' wife, Elizabeth, she conceived. And she hid herself 5 months, saying," notice what it said, "thus the Lord," this is what Elizabeth said, Thus the Lord dealt with me in the days when he looked on me to take away my reproach among men. Now, some translations, I looked at the NIV, it says, my disgrace. Other versions translate it, my shame, my humiliation. Barrenness was considered such in biblical times. Now, there were a number of ladies that were barren. We've got Sarah, we've got Elizabeth, we've got Hannah, we've got Rachel, and all those later God blessed them and allowed them to have children. And the Jewish, they have the Jewish, it's called the Mishnah, which is the oral tradition of the Jews. And the Mishnah, it said in the Mishnah, was written back around the time of before Christ was born, if a man lives with a woman for 10 years and she bears him no child, he can divorce her, even he's encouraged to divorce her. That was back in the Jewish, and I didn't say it was right, but that's what it saw. So Sarah was barren. She couldn't have children. Now let's look back at Genesis where we were. Genesis chapter 12, because as I was looking up this sermon, I noticed several things that I might not have really totally thought about that much before. Sometimes when you read right over things, it's almost like you thought, well, I didn't even notice that. But let's look here. So we read in verse 30 of Genesis 11 that Sarah was barren and she had no child. But remember, she was married to Abram. Now, in chapter 12 of Genesis, the Lord, verse 1, the Lord said to Abram. Remember Abram, who was married to Sarai. This is what was said to Abram. Get out of your country. You know where you live. Get out of your country. From your kindred, from your father's house, to a land that I'll show you. I'm going to make you a great nation, is what the word came to Abram. Back when he was, I'm going to bless you, he was told. And I'm going to make your name great. And you're going to be a blessing. And I'm going to bless those who bless you. I'm going to curse him who curses you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram departed, did what he was told. Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him. So, the word of God came and told him this. Abram did what he said, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. But notice what else. Verse 5, then Abram took Sarai, his wife. She went with him. She was 65 years old. Abram was 75 years old. They had to be comfortable where they were living. Now, they were barren. She was barren. They didn't have children. But she went right off with Abram. So Abram took Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran. And they departed, and they went to the land of Canaan, and they came to the land of Canaan. Again, Abram says he was 75 years old, so he's 10 years older than Sarah, so she was, 65. According to secular tradition, in fact, even in Josephus, which many of us have the book of Josephus, according to secular tradition, Ur of the Chaldees, that's where Abram and Sarai lived, was a very well-developed city, a cultural society, a highly advanced educational city. And Abram was told to leave and, in a sense, become a nomad. And why did Sarah leave? Because she was loyal to her husband, wasn't she? Because she was loyal to Abram. She was dedicated to serving the family. In short, she respected him. Now, remember when Ruth, back in the book of Ruth, where when Naomi was leaving to go, and Ruth said, "Where you go, I will go," because she said, "No, you go back to you go back to the Moab, I believe it was, where you live." And she said, "No, I'll go where you go, Naomi, and your God will be my God." Well, this is the same attitude that Sarah had, or Sarai at the time. She went with Abram, did she not? Now, interestingly enough, and keep your place in Genesis 12. But let's just go over real quick to look at 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, one of the many times that her name is mentioned here. It says something very interesting about her. 1 Peter 3, verse 5. It says, "For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord," not Lord like, you know, capital L, Lord. And we'll see where this happens. We'll read what he's talking about. It wasn't like let's put it this way. Abraham didn't have his wife beater shirt on, you know, with a big, Abraham was a good man. I remember the time when Penny and I were coming back from church in Rome, Georgia, one time, and we were in one lane, and there was two lanes over, some guy in a big pickup truck. He had one of these, you know, shirts where you see his big muscles, and I don't know, he got behind me and his boy, I don't even know what he was mad at me about, and he started yelling at me, "Come over here, let's fight." And I'm thinking, what's this guy mad about? Well, thankfully, he was two cars over, and he couldn't come and get me. And I remember Penny said, "Yeah, I bet he beats his wife, too." I don't know what made me think of that. But he had on one of his big, you know, shirts with his tattoos and all. And here I was just trying to come back from church. But he wasn't happy. And I was glad he was going the other direction. He couldn't get over to see me. I got out of there as quick as I could. But that has nothing to do with anything except I said it. But it says, "As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughter you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror." Now, we'll come back and see where that happens later, but we'll save that for a while. Now, let's turn back to Genesis 12. Because she was a lady, like most people are, of contradictions. And Abram was a man of contradictions. But God told them to leave Ur of the Chaldees and go to the land of Canaan. They did it. In Genesis 12, verse 10, "Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife." Now notice what Abram told his wife to do. He said, "Indeed, I know that you're a woman of beautiful countenance." In other words, you're a beautiful woman. Well, he was over 75 at the time, and she is over 65, so she must have been awfully beautiful, because notice what he said. He says, "Therefore, it's going to happen that when the Egyptians see you, that they're going to say, 'This is his wife. Let's kill him.' But they'll let you live. So please say that you're my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, and that I may live because of you." Abram told Sarai to lie for him. So it was, when Abram came into Egypt, that the Egyptians saw the woman. She was beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her, and they commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house, and he treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and get out of here," is another way of putting it. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning her, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. She lied. But so did Abram. Abram told her a lie. Now, I read something a while back. I don't remember where I even saw this, but it said, "What does a woman look for in a man at respective ages?" And again, this is just something I read. It said, at age 22, what is a woman looking for in a man? It says she wants him to be handsome. Now, this is when the woman's 22. She wants him to be handsome. She wants him to be charming. She wants to be financially successful. She wants to be a caring listener. She wants him to be witty. She wants to be in good shape. She wants him to dress with style. She wants him to appreciate the finer things in life. Full of thoughtful surprises. Of course, that doesn't fit any of us, does it? An imaginative and a romantic lover. That's what she expects at age 32, at age 22. At age 32, she said she wants to be nice looking, preferably with hair on his head. She hopes he opens car doors. She hopes he holds chairs for her. She hopes he remembers her birthdays and anniversaries, seeks romance at least once a week. At age 42, what's a woman looking for in a man? Not too ugly. Bald head's okay. Doesn't drive off till she's in the car. Shaves on most weekends. At age 52, she hopes he keeps his hair and his nose and ears trimmed to an appropriate length. She hopes he does not belch or scratch in public. She hopes he shaves at least on some weekends. At age 62, she hopes he doesn't scare small children. She hopes he remembers where the bathroom is. She hopes he remembers where he left his teeth. At age 72, she hopes he's breathing. I don't know where that came from, but I saw it somewhere, and I thought, but Sarah, I was 65 years old, and Abraham was 75. So, you know, it's sort of saying at first we look at the physical, and that's the case with the Egyptians when they saw Sarah. Now back to Genesis again. I'm not going to turn there, but you could turn to Genesis 20, verse 1 through 12, and here's another case of Abraham telling Sarah to lie. This time it was to Abimelech. Lying. Okay, Genesis 16. Let's look at another situation that makes you think, well, Sarah's a little bit of a contradiction. Genesis 16, verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, see, now the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. In other words, I'm barren. So please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. Then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband, and Abram to be his wife, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. So what would that mean? He would have been, 85 or so, and Sarai had been 75. And what's this about this child? Am I ever going to have a child? She had to be thinking. Verse 4. Abram went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress, or Sarai, despised Hagar. So first she's telling him, maybe I can have a child, you can have a child through her. And then when she conceived, she was not happy. Then Sarai said to Abram, my wrong be upon you. Our Living Bible said, it's all your fault. Well, it wasn't all Abram's fault. It was Sarai that said, why don't we try this? It says, it's all your fault. I gave my maid into your embrace, and when you saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me, is what she said to Abraham. But notice, so Abram said to Sarai, indeed your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please. And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. So Hagar ran away. Well, we know the story here. Verse 7, now the angel of the Lord found Hagar, by the spring in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. And he You know, the angel said to Hagar, Sarai's maid, where have you come from and where are you going? Well, of course, he knew. God sent the angel. He said, where are you going? Where have you come from? And she said, I'm fleeing from the presence of my mistress Sarai. She was afraid, running away. So the angel of the Lord said, return to your mistress and submit yourself unto her hand. And the angel of the Lord said to her, I'm going to multiply your descendants. To Hagar, he says, I'm going to multiply your descendants exceedingly so that they shall not be counted for a multitude. And the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you're with child, and you're going to bear a son, and you're going to call his name Ishmael. Ishmael, which quite frankly means God hears, because the Lord has heard your affliction. But notice what verse 12 says. He's going to be a wild man. Well, look at the Middle East. Big mistake on Abram and Sarai's part, was it not? He's going to be a wild man. His hand's going to be against every man. And every man's hand's going to be against him. He's going to dwell in the presence of all his brethren. It's going to be a problem, is it not? Verse 15 and 16. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram named his son, who Hagar bore, and named him Ishmael. Now, Abram was 86 years old. 86. Remember, they left when he was 65. So 21 years had passed. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. So if he was 86, that would mean Sarai was either 76 or 77, depending upon, you know, the time. Now we turn to the next chapter, Genesis chapter 17, verse 1. Now we got time goes by here, because right here Abram was 86, and now in the next verse, the first verse of chapter 17, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I'm the Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless. That's what God said to Abram. In verse 15, I could read the whole, but for lack of time. Verse 15, God said to Abraham now, well, you read, he changed Abram's name to Abraham. And he changed Sarai's name to Sarah. Then God said to Abraham, verse 15, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah, which means princess, shall be her name. Verse 16 through 19. And I'm going to bless her. Bless who? Bless Sarah. I'm going to bless her, and I'm going to also give you a son by her. And I'm going to bless her, and she's going to be the mother of nations. Kings and people are going to come from her. He was 99. She was 89. Then Abraham fell on his face and he laughed. This is impossible, he was thinking. Abraham fell on his face and he laughed and he said in his heart, shall a child be born to a man who's 100 years old? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. He had Ishmael, but he didn't know God had more plans. Then God said, no, Sarah, your wife's going to bear you a son. And you're going to call his name Isaac. You ever wonder what Isaac means? And I'm going to establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his descendants after him. Abraham laughed at God. The name Isaac means laughter or chuckles. Look it up. Now, it's interesting. I guess the moral is not to laugh at God. But it's interesting, you know, how God changed the name of Sarah to princess, and Abram to Abraham. He changed Jacob to Israel. But he never changed Isaac's name. Every time Sarah and Abraham would look at Isaac, they would think of the name Chuckles, because they had not listened to God. Now, so why is Sarah in the faith chapter? Why is she an example of righteousness? We've seen some things here. We've seen some good things, don't get me wrong. And we've seen some other things. Well, let's keep going. Let's look at Genesis 18, verse 1 and 2. Then the Lord, the one who became Jesus Christ, the Word, appeared to him by Abraham by the terebinth tree of Mamre, and he was sitting in the tent in the heat of the day. So he lifted his eyes, Abraham lifted his eyes, and behold, three men were standing by him. And we can read on further that two of those were angels, and one was the one who became Jesus Christ. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them, and he bowed himself to the ground. Doesn't explain a lot, it just sort of tells it. Now, dropping down to verse 9. Then they said to him, to Abraham, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "Well, she's here in the tent." And he said, "I will certainly return to you according to the time of life. And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." And Sarah was listening in the tent door behind him. Sarah heard them talking about that she was going to have a wife. She was 89 years old. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age. And Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself. Not out loud, but she laughed within herself and said, "After I've grown old, shall I have the pleasure, my Lord, being old also?" In other words, how can I have a child? How in the world can I have a child? And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'Surely shall I surely bear a child since I'm old?'" Why did Sarah laugh? He knew she was laughing inside and didn't trust, didn't believe it. Verse 14, this is the word that became Jesus Christ, said this to Abraham, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" Why does she laugh? He said, "Is anything too hard for God? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." And when Sarah heard this, she denied it. She says, "Oh, I didn't laugh." Well, that's a lie. For she was afraid. And he said, not Abraham, but the one who became Jesus Christ, said, "No, you did laugh. You laughed." Now, think about it. Verse 14, he said, "Is anything too hard for God?" I believe this was the turn, personally, I believe this was the turning point in Sarah's life. She's in the faith chapter as an example of righteousness, and her conversion had to take place at some point. Here's Sarah, a barren woman, told by God that she'd have a child when she was 90 years old. And God had said, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" She probably started asking herself, "Well, is it possible?" Well, they were on their way to Sodom and Gomorrah when they saw, and they saw what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah. They saw what happened to Lot's wife. You can read on here in the very next chapter, chapter 19, how depraved Sodom was and what happened. Chapter 21 of Genesis, verse 1. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived. Now, let's take a step back for a moment. When you first get pregnant, you don't realize you're pregnant. So, when it happened, didn't probably know at the moment. But then Sarah probably woke up one morning with morning sickness. And Sarah probably started noticing her stomach growing. And Sarah started exercising, but she couldn't get the weight off. And then she must have known something was happening. But you had to wonder, how am I going to have a baby at my age, at 9 years old? Then at some point, she had to start thinking, well, maybe it is possible. Maybe this is possible. Then we see the first miracle baby of the Bible. Verse 2, Genesis 21, for Sarah conceived. She bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time in which God had spoken to him. Just like God said it happened. He was 100, she was 90. Made no sense intellectually. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Isaac. Which means laughter or chuckles. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born, and Sarah said, God's made me laugh, so that all who hear will laugh with me. It's a happy laughter, not a sad. So she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children, for I have borne him a son in his old age? And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son. And we can read on about what happened to Ishmael. But what a miracle. Now we come, and we won't read the verses because you know it. We come to the severest trial probably in Abraham and Sarah's life, when God told Abraham to take Isaac, that miracle baby, that miracle son, who I don't know how old he was at the time, but sacrifice him. Was Sarah in on this? Do you not think Abraham would have talked to his wife about it? Would not Abraham tell Sarah what God told him to do? I think he would have. And who knows, maybe even Sarah told Abraham that, hey, God will take care of this. She was quite a woman. Once Isaac was born, Isaac knew the mother that God called that great woman of faith and righteousness. Now, what the angel in Christ had told Sarah is also what he tells each one of us who has ever been called by God. What does he call us? What does he tell us? Is anything too hard for God? Is anything too hard for God to do? We look at this baby and think, how did that happen? Well, how were you born? How was I born? How did God create all that? Man comes up with all these reasons. But is there anything too hard for God? The God who created each of us, who created our bodies, the God who performed all these miracles we read about in the Bible, the God who created the miracle of giving us a mind that could think and could become converted. Is anything too hard for him? Of course not. What problem can he not help you or I conquer in our life? Is anything too hard for God? You know the answer. Let's turn to Habakkuk, one of the books of the Bible we don't turn to very often, in the minor prophets. I could tell you what page it is on my Bible, but that probably wouldn't help a whole lot. It's right after Zephaniah. No, it's not. It's right before Zephaniah. Habakkuk is a prophecy, and the prophet Habakkuk is looking at the evil in the city where he lives, and he's asking God, what are you going to do? And God answers and said that he's going to send the Chaldeans to wipe out this city. Habakkuk didn't want to hear this because those were his people. And notice what the word of God came to Habakkuk in chapter 2 of Habakkuk and verse 20, just plucking a verse out of here, because Habakkuk didn't like the hearing that God was going to do anything hurt the city, you know, was going to punish the city for their sins. And here's what the word came back to Habakkuk in verse 20 of chapter 2 says, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Basically, Habakkuk said, just shut up and listen, Habakkuk. God was saying, I know what I'm doing. Psalm 46. We sing this hymn, Psalm 46. As we read these words, we think of the hymn in our hymnal. Psalm 46, verse 1, God is our refuge and our strength. He's a very present help in trouble. When we're in trouble, don't we call out to God? Just like a friend of Penny's said, her husband said he was an atheist. But then when their child got sick, they called and asked if we'd pray for their child. Was he an atheist? Why would he care about if we prayed for their child? Said, God is our refuge, God's our strength, is a very present help in trouble, therefore we'll not fear. Though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with swelling. Verse 8 through 11. It says, come, behold the works of the Lord, who has made desolations in the earth. Like, God's going to deal with this sin-stressed world because he loves the world, because he's bringing his kingdom. It says, come, behold the works of the Lord, who made desolations in the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow. He cuts the spears in two. He burns the chariots in fire. Nobody's going to stand up against God. And then notice what it says in the last two verses. Be still and know that I am God. God's in charge. God's going to take care of things. Even though we saw the stock market, which probably none of us have enough money in the stock market, it really matters that much. But we saw the stock market going down. Do you not think there's going to be many, many traumas coming our way? Yes. Be still and know that I'm God. I will be exalted among the nations, is what God says. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. God's there. It's basically saying, give up and admit that God is the supreme. God is in charge. Sarah learned this lesson. Look at how she learned the lesson. Now, Sarah died a while after the traumatic experience when Isaac was, they thought he might be sacrificed. Let's turn back as we begin to wrap this up to Genesis 23. Let's see the end of Sarah's life here in Genesis 23. This, oh, man. I know things were different back then, but I always laugh when I, not laugh, I'm in awe when I read this verse. Verse 1 of Genesis 23, Sarah lived 127 years. I wouldn't want to live 127 years. Now, Macy Renfro might, if God doesn't come back first. But Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. So Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, that's Hebron. We hear of Hebron today. In the land of Canaan, and Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. That was his wife that had died. And Abraham, even if she was 127, he was 137. And he went to weep with her. Now Isaac was, I'm sure, moping around sad because his mother had died. And that's when, if you read on the rest of this chapter, Abraham sent his servant Eliezer to find Isaac a wife. Isaac was still not married. And you can read about it. In fact, chapter 24. Verse 1. Abraham was old. He was well advanced in age. And the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And of course, but his wife had died. And he had lived a full life, and he wanted his son to have a good wife. And he sent his servant Eliezer, and God, I'm sure, directed it to where she went. And there was Rebekah. And you can read the story. I don't have time to go through it all here. You can read it, and you know it already. But chapter 24, verse 63. Eliezer is bringing back Rebekah. The one was to be the wife of Isaac. In verse 63, or verse 61. Verse 61, then Rebekah and her maids arose, they rode on camels, and they followed the man. What man? Eliezer, who came at Abraham's direction. And God chose that wife, I'm sure. So the servant took Rebekah and departed, and Isaac came from the way of Beer, whatever. And he dwelt in the south. Now, Isaac went out to meditate in the field. His mother had died not that long before. He missed his mother. Then he was waiting and wondering who his wife was going to be. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field in the evening. And he lifted his eyes and looked, there were camels were coming. And Rebekah, she lifted her eyes. And when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel. For she had said to the servant, who is this man walking in the field to meet us? And the servant said, it's my master. It's the one you're going to marry. So she took a veil and covered herself. Now the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done, or actually really that God had done. Then Isaac, notice this, he brought Rebekah into her mother Sarah's tent, and she became his wife. And he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. A new chapter starting in Isaac's life. His mother had died, but now he's married to a woman that God had chosen. Sarah had become a woman of God, and that's what Isaac saw in his mother. I'm sure he saw her in his mother. And we as a church and as a Christian have gone through hard times in our life. We'll continue to go through hard times. But is there anything too hard for God? Of course, the answer is no. When we come to a crossroad, ask yourself the same question that Sarah asked. Is there anything too hard for God? Of course not. I had a poem. I don't usually read poems, but as I wrap this up, I saw this poem by a man by the name of Art Martinez. I don't even know who he is, but I thought the poem was interesting. It's entitled Hanging On. I'll just read this short poem, then it had a couple more verses. It says, in spite of my infirmity, occasional adversity, with Christ as my security, I'm hanging on. Though weakness may afflict my soul as passing years exact their toll, I have God's kingdom as my goal. I'm hanging on. If suffering should be my lot, forsake his children, God will not. And even as I have been taught, I'm hanging on. If I endure life's trials by fire, God's character I will require. And he will grant my heart's desire, so I'm hanging on. The world may err and misbehave and flounder as an ocean wave. But till death's taken me to the grave, I'm hanging on. We are to hang on because nothing is too hard for the Lord and nothing is too hard for God. And God will resurrect you if you die before the return of Jesus Christ. Now let's close by turning to Jeremiah 32. Jeremiah 32. In Jeremiah 32, Jeremiah had asked God to do something that might seem, or I should take that back. Jeremiah had been told by God, if you read the chapter, to do something that might seem strange. God had told him, and you can read the words here, that he was going to wipe out many of the Jews and have Jerusalem taken by captive by the Babylonians, and that the land would become desolate. So God had told, and you can read the words here, that God told Jeremiah, I'm going to wipe out, I'm going to put this country into captivity, this country is turned against me, I'm going to do these things. But he told Jeremiah to go by a field. And even though God had told him he was going to basically put Israel into captivity or Judah into captivity, he told Jeremiah to buy a field. And Jeremiah asked, why? Why? Verse 16 of Jeremiah 32. Here's Jeremiah speaking. He did what God told him to do, even though he didn't understand the point of the purpose. It says, now when I had delivered the purchase deed to Barak the son of Neri, I prayed to the Lord and I said, ah, Lord God, behold, you've made the heavens, you made the earth by your great power and your outstretched arm. There's nothing too hard for you. And you can read on, but notice what God said to Jeremiah in verse 26 and 27. Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah and said, behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? And the answer is no. And if you read on, Jeremiah basically said, now I understand.